You're listening to Cairo News Radio Middays.
Welcome to Cairo News Radio Middays. Jack Stein, Spike O'Neill, Spike O'Neill, Mister. We did it. We walked. What did
we
you say?
We're here. We're doing it. We walked out.
Wow, 200 people, Jack. 200.
What are you, five? Like, okay, this reminds me. I don't know why, Spike. I was thinking about, do you remember when you were in elementary school?
Sure.
And you, or middle school or high school, and the teacher would be late, and then people would start saying, you know, if the teacher's not here in another 5 minutes, we're legally allowed to leave. If the teacher's, do you remember that?
I can remember comments like that being made, sure.
So this is very reminiscent to me of, that is just so underwhelming and so sad, right? We did it! We walked out! It's like, okay, great.
We're doing it!
We need to save that forever. Nothing.
You're doing nothing, lady, is what you're doing.
We're going back in.
We're going to hang out.
Again, man, I just don't understand the need to, you know.
I don't know what my future looks like.
I just like that is just the most, that is just such a forced and just sad state of being, right? You know, Spike, did I tell you about that that organization I donate to where they dig wells for kids in Africa?
Yeah.
So for those of you who don't know, I give money to an organization. They go to Africa and they dig wells, modern wells, for certain native groups in Africa so that these people don't have to relocate, basically. It's a really beautiful endeavor that they do. And the other thing they don't do, Spike, is they don't go there and they don't say, hey, if you guys will all take these Bibles, we'll also give you a well. You know what I mean? They're a Christian organization, but they don't force anything on these people.
Yeah, they're just about life and not proselytization.
First and foremost. So it's not like, hey, let us build a church and then we'll get you a well. It's we want to take our money that we have. We want to give you a well so that these kids can have clean drinking water, right? And I think about the purpose and the initiative and the drive that takes to say to yourself, I'm going to take a year or 2 years or 5 years out of my life, and I'm going to go all around sub-Saharan Africa, and I'm in the diaspora, and I'm going to dig wells for people, and I'm going to be paid very little to do it solely because I want to help my fellow man. And then I want to contrast that with somebody who sits in a nice climate-controlled building all day and then decides 1 week, you know what, I don't like the way I'm being treated. I'm going to...
They won't listen to me.
And I'm going to walk out, and I'm going to say, we're here. We're doing it. It's like, okay, lady, go dig wells in a place where people have no clean water, and then come back and tell me what you're quote-unquote doing, right?
Like, yep.
Please.
There's a lack of perspective. That's an excellent point. I've got to go to five different continents with a different organization that does very similar thing. It's a local Christian based organization called World Vision, and their number one job is to safe, clean drinking water. And going to other countries and seeing how the rest of the world lives, will give you such a sense of perspective that no one in today's walkout, I guarantee you, no one in today's walkout has any sense whatsoever of how great they've got it.
Speaking of, by the way, perspective, there's a lot of talk going in online circles about the debt ceiling and what the New Deal means for student loan payments. Spike, I'm sure you've heard about this, is that one of the conditions of the new debt ceiling bill is that student loan payments have to restart by August 30th. Are you familiar with this? So the reason that this is a big deal, and the reason that this is kind of a point of contention, is because one of the platforms that Joe Biden ran on was student debt relief. It's one of the things he promised to the voters, and he's been trying to get it done for quite some time. Currently, his case is sitting in the Supreme Court. I'm sure we'll be talking about it in 3 or 4 weeks as soon as they release their decision on that,
right?
Whether or not he could use the money or the powers that were given to him under the COVID-19 emergency, to write off all this debt. Now, his plan wasn't a bad plan. It wasn't the best plan. But again, he's Joe Biden. So, you know, he's trying to work things in the middle, or at least his team is, however you want to slice it.
Right.
Again, do I need to do the disclaimer where I said I didn't vote for Joe Biden? Do I need to do this?
No, I think it's pretty established at this point.
Okay. All right, cool. So, but the bet the general idea was is that if you received a Pell Grant, you would receive $20,000 worth of debt relief.
Right.
And if you didn't, you would get about $10,000.
Exactly.
And that was only going to be for a certain level of borrower, right? And the way that it was going to be paid off, it was $500 billion over 10 years was the idea. So it wasn't this like massive, well, we're just going to dump money on the problem and fix it. It was, well, we'll take away this debt and then we'll pay it off over 10 years. Really interesting plan. We can get into the merits of it or whatever. One of the arguments that people were making in favor of this was, well, people who got PPP loans, payment protection loans, to the tune of around $700 billion, they got those waived off by the federal government. Mm-hmm. They got those excused, the payment of which was not over 10 years. It was immediate, right? Cash in hand.
Cash we're down. Not
right. Just and so when people talk about inflation, we need to acknowledge that as well, that complete mishandling of the payment protection program and then also the decision to just write off all that money and make it bad debt. And when we talk about this, Spike, when we talk about debt, the most common talking point is, well, you took out the loan and you pay it back. But we have to be more wrinkly brain about this. We have to think about this in a much more complicated way. The debt bubble, the student debt bubble, is around $1.6 trillion. The projections on people being able to pay that back is very bad. So what you're looking at now is a similar circumstance to what you had in 2007, 2006, 2007, 2008, where you have this massive debt bubble in which people are not going to, they're going to default on these loans and they're not going to be able to pay them back. And so what you're looking at is potentially another economic crisis, only now instead of a housing crisis, you're going to have it be these loans, because what you effectively have, Spike, is the same model, but instead of subprime mortgages, it's subprime student loans.
Predatory lending type loans.
Knowing that these kids couldn't pay it back. Now, again, I know that the popular talking point is, well, you took it out, you pay it back. I would have said the same thing in 2008 to somebody who lost their house or whatever it is. Well, you took out a bad loan, whatever it might be. But if you actually look at it, this could be potentially very bad. Because you have a lot of people who can't pay these loans back and they're going to default and they're going to basically lose everything. And then for what? So that we can stand on our moral high ground and say, well, we told you not to take out those loans and you should have paid them back, right?
I mean, I paid mine. You pay yours. Nobody paid my student loan. That's the one I hate. I hate that argument.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the thing is, you can disagree with Joe Biden's plan on the issue, but what he was effectively trying to do, again, you can just remove all your biases from Joe Biden, as I will do in this moment, and we can remove the fact that he's likely one of the most corrupt politicians to ever live, and his family is likely attached to all these criminal enterprises in China.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
We can move that out of the way, and we can just look at the economic, just the raw numbers of this, the economic outcomes. Is he trying to, with the, or was he trying to, with this $500 billion, was he trying to effectively lessen the economic impact of $1.6 trillion going into default? Yes, he was. And that was shot down by people who were spouting out nostrums about, well, you took it out and you got to pay it back.
Right, right.
Which is, again, I agree with you, but this is much bigger than just somebody taking out $5,000 to go to community college. These are people with $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 loans who will never be able to pay them back.
Right.
So you have one of two options. You can do what we did in 2008, and you can have a recession, and you can have people screaming and crying, and you can have people going down to Wall Street, sticking it to the banks, and you can have people being kicked out of their homes, and we can have huge economic fallout. Or you could have the government do for some of these borrowers what they did for every corporation in 2008,
Bingo.
2009,
Bingo.
Which is to say, well, we're not going to get rid of all your debt, but we'll get rid of enough of it so that it's not going to cause this massive economic fallout. And then when you think about it like that, Spike, you realize, okay, well, I have all my nostrums about my conservative ideas about you take out a loan, you pay it back. But in realizing that something like 30 to 40% of these kids were given loans, knowing that they would never be able to pay them back, we can either go back into recession, or we can pay this back over the course of 10 years and have minimal inflation. But again, what do I know? I'm just looking at the data. I could be totally wrong. I could be totally wrong about this.
The way I look at this is, you know, what I would have done, I would have done this completely differently than Biden did, but that I don't know anyone to talk about.
Yeah, because you're a socialist. Yeah. You're a communist.
Well, no, what I would have done is I would have taken everybody's debt. How much did you borrow?
Right.
Okay. And from that number, I would have taken it and reframed it with a fair interest rate. How much have you paid back? Okay. And that's okay. You borrowed $80,000. You've paid back $80,000 already at a fair 3% interest rate, 7% interest rate. Now you still owe $25,000 for the interest or some mechanism like that. I would have recalibrated every piece of debt right now with whatever the daily, that day's interest rate was. The national debt rate. My sister has paid back more than she borrowed.
Right.
And she still owes more than she borrowed. She never missed a payment. She's going to start again in August. She's been a professional now for 25 years since she graduated. She literally has paid more than she borrowed, and she still owes more than she borrowed. The system wasn't lazy people who took ridiculous majors. It was a predatory lending mechanism. That's what it was. And the half a trillion dollars Biden's talking about, right? $500 billion?
Yeah.
That's money that's going to be spent in the economy, not just paid back to predatory lenders.
Correct.
That was the whole gist of it.
The idea was that those people would then have money by which they would go spend. It's actually a pretty brilliant economic plan.
Juiced it right to the economy instead of to the predatory lenders.
So the other talking point that people have here is that they say, well, why should I as a taxpayer pay off the loan of somebody who got a degree? This is a good one. They go, why should I, for underwater basket weaving or lesbian dance theory? If you actually look at the numbers of people who have these loans, do you know what the most common person who will be affected by this? There's a list of people who will be, if this does pass and people get their 20,000, you know who it benefits the most?
Mm-mm.
Nurses, cops, teachers.
There you go.
Isn't that so funny? And so, because it was only for people who make under $125,000 a year.
Right.
And when the complicated thing about it, Spike, is that I had to look into this for about 45 minutes of my day before I really understood how complex it was. And then I went, okay, well, it's not the best plan of all time, but is it this socialist communist program that it's made out to be? Not really. On top of that, Spike, the thing that I find to be even more frustrating about this is like the contempt that people have for people who took out bad loans when they were 18, 19 years old. Just that the raw contempt that people have for young people who got a bad deal. And we have a tremendous amount of sympathy for people who took out subprime mortgages in 2006 and 2007. Everyone has sympathy for those people. Well, you got duped. You shouldn't have been given that loan. But when it comes to somebody who's 18 who wanted to go be a teacher or go be a cop and get their degree first, whatever it might be, or a dental assistant, right? What do we say to those people? Well, that's your fault. That's your responsibility. To me, it's just like, you know, do you know what the tax increase came out to? By the way, I did the math on this. Do you know what the tax increase came out to per citizen in the United States, per taxpaying citizen? An additional $3.50 a year.
One coffee. You're not willing to donate that to your fellow man.
It's like, what is this? What is this? Right. But you have this media cycle out there that is not in any way, shape or form equipped to even talk about this in such a way so that people can understand it. And it is annoying beyond annoying. What I would do, Spike, is this. I would have stolen Donald Trump's his plan for his platinum plan that he wanted to have for black Americans, entrepreneurs. And I would have said, I would have reset the interest rates to like below like 0.1%.
Below subprime?
I would have made them so low it's not even funny. And then I would establish payment programs that were below 4% of somebody's paycheck, right? Make it very, very small. And so that people can have a plan to pay it back over 10 years or whatever.
Right,
That wasn't crippling, not at the 10% that it is now, which is absolutely crippling when people can't pay it back. And in that way, you're having somebody be fiscally responsible. There's a way to solve this outside of just doing like your stereotypical talking points of you took it out, you pay it back.
Right.
But a lot of people don't want to have that conversation because it involves the government. And so when we try to talk about it in a way that's economically complex, I suppose people go, they have all this resistance to it, and I understand it. I get it 100%. But when we actually break down the numbers, you go, well, maybe this isn't such a bad idea. Is it the best idea? No. Was it a huge mistake? Yes. But how are we going to fix it is the thing. And that, I think, is the direction we should be going in, rather than saying, you know, you broke it, you buy it, right? Because that's just not, it's not working. It's
what,
not going to work.
What drives me nuts is that my four-year education back in the 80s was about $19,000. That's a semester now.
Yeah, that's the other part.
And the
of
folks,
it.
I paid mine back. Well, yours was nothing. Mine was nothing. Kids these days that are just coming out of school we're saddled with $100,000 plus in college debt.
Well, the other problem though is that the colleges have to stop accepting people who can't pay for loans, right? And they don't want to do that because they want the sweet government money.
Right.
I mean,
that's not true.
There is not a university or a state school that will turn down that sweet, sweet government backed loan. They're just not going to do it. So what you need to do is these colleges have to say, well, we're going to have our scholarships come from our endowments, our massive endowments, rather than have it come from the federal government. And they don't want to do that because they've got their money invested into petroleum or diamonds or whatever it is.
Ooh.
And so they don't want to. Why would I spend my endowment money?
Why tap into their pocket where they can go into the government's pocket? Of course.
Right. Exactly. So it's a complex issue. I'm glad we got to talk about it, and I'm glad we got to discuss at length. When we get back, we shall be Mr. Trump yet again is in the news. So Donald Trump, he's a man who likes loyalty, Mr. O'Neill.
Yeah,
he is. He's a guy who demands loyalty and respect. And when you cross the line, he might have to dress you down a little bit. He might have to put you in your place. Was he inappropriate in his response to someone who used to work for him who maybe got a number wrong? We shall find out when we get back right after this. Former Trump press secretary and winner of the 2021 Most Complicated Name to Pronounce Award, Kayleigh McEnany.
Say that. McEnany.
I just can't with this name. Did her parents hate her when she was... Let's name this baby the most indecipherable thing that we possibly can. What is it, Spike? I have never been able to lodge this in my mind.
McEnany.
Right? I will never. That's your Irish in you, right, Mr. O'Neill? Yeah. I just will never be able to get it down. So she was on her show. She's got a show called Outnumbered, and she hosts it with. That was a little Jiminy Glick, wasn't it?
I love that.
Outnumbered.
I love Jiminy Glick.
That was a little Martin Short.
So, right? Someday, let me tell you of the time I got to play him like a bagpipe.
Okay, cool. So she was on her show with Jesse Waters, who's the co-host. And she was just talking about a recent poll that was talking about Ron DeSantis v. Donald Trump in the numbers. Now, this poll was done in the original poll. It was basically a survey that was done at Emerson College. And basically they were saying that Trump was leading DeSantis by first it was 25 points. And then they go, oh, wait, you know what? The data is actually wrong. It's actually 42 points. Right. So they corrected it at the time. Her producer hands her the data and she goes, well, Trump's only leading by 25 points. It's an honest mistake that anybody can make. And then Donald Trump, he goes ballistic and he gets very, very upset about this. He says he truths this out on Truth Social, says Kayleigh Milquetoast McEnany just gave out the wrong poll numbers on Fox News. I am 34 points up on DeSanctimonious, not 25 points up. And then he goes on to say, while 25 is great, it's not 34. So she knew the number was corrected upwards by the group that did the poll. The rhinos and globalists can have her. Fox News should only use real stars. Now, this comes from a man who demands loyalty from the people beneath him. This is a perfectionist. You only become a man worth $2.5 billion on paper by being a certain breed of a guy. So a lot of people are saying that maybe he went this is crossing the line. They were saying that this is too much, attacking little Kayleigh McEnany. With her complicated name. It's unfair to do this to the young woman. Why would he do such a thing? In my mind, Spike, I think the people need to realize that this is what the man does in order to keep people in line. It's not about Kayleigh McEnany. It's about everybody else around him that he's trying to keep in line and trying to so that they're all kind of on edge, right? That he can turn on you at any point in time, and that he can, and basically, I don't know, but you know, well,
his ability to make anybody a punchline.
Yes, exactly.
With his nicknaming skills, and I saw one report: Trump gets his fastball back in labeling McEnany milk toast.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And to the people who love and support former President Trump, this is his power move. This is his game. He's got his fastball back. That's a pretty good name. Doesn't matter that he misspelled milk toast. Nobody cares about that. It's M-I-L-Q-U-E, not M-I-L-K. But that's okay.
That is so bad.
That's okay.
But is this cringe or is this base? Because you got to keep in mind, this is a guy who demands perfection from, much like Andrew, right? Andrew is the boss of all the board ops, and Andrew demands perfection. Is this not right? Am I correct in saying this, Andrew? You demand perfection from everyone you work with?
Close to perfection. Yeah, yes. as close as you can get.
First mistake, you get a scolding. Second mistake, you lose a finger, but just one. Right? And anybody can run a board with 9 fingers, as we've learned.
Right. So is this over the line, or is this just part? Because everyone is so surprised, and my thought is that this is just the way that the guy is. You cross the guy, that's what he does to you. It doesn't surprise me. I don't think it's shocking. I don't think it's weird. I don't think it's bizarre. Mr. O'Neill, do you think that this is cringe or base?
I think it's pure Trump. It's very base, in, because you know what you got. You know who you're dealing with.
Right,
And the fact that everybody that he'll throw shade at will happily roll back into the fold when the time is necessary. If Trump manages to win the Republican nomination, you can bet your bottom dollar Kayleigh McEnany will be right back in the fold, and Trump will be happy to have her back, and all this will be forgotten, much like Ted Cruz's dad being accused of killing Kennedy and the fact that his wife is ugly. Ted Cruz doesn't care. He's happy to carry Trump's water. Once they get back in the fold, they're fine.
Chris Martin, is this something to be surprised about, or is this just like
no? It's not surprising at all, but it's so gross to be his press secretary and get up there every day and say the things she had to say, and then just like shoot her down like that. It's horrible.
One stupid disloyalty,
and it wasn't even disloyal. It was just
a wrong number.
I remember. Do you remember when Sarah Huckabee Sanders was the press secretary?
Oh, yeah.
And people were just so cruel to that poor woman. They were commenting on her lazy eye and how fat she was, and everything that was inconsistent about her kind of southern drawl. They really ripped into that lady. And she told a story one time about how this is when the president went to go visit Shinzo Abe when he was the prime minister of Japan. And they're going to meet Shinzo Abe, and she just was reading Twitter on the plane. I guess it affected her emotionally, and so she was talking to President Trump, and he said something like, "Don't let it get to you. They can't do what you do," and he was basically being encouraging, you know, in a very fatherly or paternal way, saying, "They write terrible things about me. They're going to write terrible things about you, which is the way the job is." My concern is when someone is like that privately and then publicly they're like, "Hey, milk toast, learn how to read." It's like that is disturbing. That the level of inconsistency there should be disturbing, I think, to anybody. But of course, I think the base doesn't really care that much because they love this kind of stuff, right? They love
it's their bread and butter. But what I find so ironic and hypocritical is that a man who demands loyalty offers none in return.
What are you talking about? He's loyal to all kinds of people.
Former Chief of Staff Kelly, not loyal.
Unbelievably loyal.
Mick Mulvaney, not loyal. Come on, totally, he's run a bus loyal over all these people.
Not true. This is all part of his three-dimensional chess. You don't understand the man the way that I understand the man.
Well, that's true. I don't understand.
This is Machiavellian, where you insult and malign the people who defend you so that they know how much you appreciate them. This is next level. Why do you think I'm mean to everybody?
And then you just squirrel back into your circle of trust.
Right, exactly. Why do you think I'm mean to everybody and I insist, it's in my contract, that nobody make eye contact with me when I walk into Cairo Radio Studios? It's solely because, Mr. O'Neill, I have respect and love for my coworkers.
That's a nice thing to remember. It also fosters a never-ending sense of need to get back into your love. To get back into your good graces.
Right, exactly. This is why I insist that everybody call me Mr. Aces, regardless of who I am speaking to. and that my office has a do not disturb light, not a one of the thing you hang on the door handle, but as the light that I hit it and the light pops on, so that if someone comes up to the door and they knock and they say, "Hey, you busy there, boss? You busy there, Mr. Aces?" I don't have to say a word. I just boop. I hit the
you
light.
Step on the foot pedal below your desk and then pop and right in their face. Gives them like a tan. It's so bright.
I'm busy.
But busy. Is this, go away.
Is the thing about this is a thing that I've learned about studying Donald Trump for so many years is that the base likes it. They love it. They don't care. They want an attack dog. They want someone who's going right for the throat. And they don't it doesn't really make any difference to a lot of people out there who he is mean to, as long as he gets the results that they want. And unfortunately, the results that they want by and large are to feel safe in a country where they no longer feel like they belong, right? So this is like for the Hill and for everybody else to run this story and be like, "Oh, he's so rude." I'm like, "Okay, great."
Newsflash, Trump is rude. Wow. Yeah,
wow. You're telling me that a guy who threw another guy out of a press conference because he asked him a question he didn't like, you're telling me that guy is like, all right, it doesn't matter. But anyway, it happens.
Well, everybody's running to Kayleigh McEnany's defense. Brit Hume, the folks over at Newsmax.
She's so nice.
She's a sweetheart. Never told a lie in her life. Yeah,
right. She's got impossible to pronounce name. I mean, it's really difficult to make it this high in the business. Simple names is where it's at, Mr. O'Neill. When we get back, speaking of simple, by the way, Lindsey Graham now has an arrest warrant out for him by the Russians. Why? For why? Find out when we get back right after this. Sweet Tea Lindsey Graham had some of his comments edited, and as a result of this, the Russians, the Soviets are after him. They've issued an arrest warrant saying that because of what he said, he should clearly come in and face what is a criminal. Basically, you don't have freedom of speech in Russia, is a nice way to put it. So you can't say things, so they issued a warrant for his arrest, basically for no reason whatsoever.
Says he's promoting Russia-phobic.
Right, it just is so silly. But the sillier part about this is that it is an edited video in which he said the phrase, but he said it in two parts. And some genius at the State Department cut it together, and then the Russians got wind of it.
Well, didn't the Russian State Department cut it together?
It
was their editing, right?
Yeah. I thought it was just regular media who cut it together, and then it might be.
I thought it was the Russians who cut it together. He and Zelensky were speaking, right?
He and Ukraine's
President Zelensky were speaking.
Right, yeah.
We have a little bit, 8 seconds of it here.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Now you are free.
Yes.
And we will be.
And the Russians are down.
It's the best money we've ever spent. Thank you so much.
So those are two separate incidences.
Wow.
That's the best money we ever spent. Besides that one time when I learned how to make sweet tea for the first time.
That's good money.
What we do is take the tea, what's still hot, and you put the sugar in the tea. And so it emulsifies and it combines and sink to the bottom, get all mushy, right? That's the best money I've ever spent.
That's good Lindsey Graham, dude.
Thank you. I got to tell you, Donald Trump, I would never vote for that man again as long as I live. As long as I got sweet tea in my veins, I'll never vote for Donald Trump 24 hours later. That is the only man that can be president of the United States. I bet all the sweet tea in the world.
I am done. About that one. I'll tell you what, though, his comments, right? I mean, first off, Russians, didn't they bar like 500 Americans from entering Russia like a month ago? Everybody from Obama to Biden to Stephen Colbert, Rachel Maddow, the 200 different politicians in the Americans who were persecuting January 6th dissidents. Those people are not allowed to go to Russia. Like, we were all planning to go to Russia this spring anyway to watch some concert together. I don't know.
Right.
But the fact that when he said the best money we've ever spent, that part I couldn't agree with more.
What?
Well, because let me tell you why I feel this way. And I've been saying this for a long, long time.
Okay.
We have spent so far, I think, about $75 billion in aid to Ukraine. right?
All right.
Along with another, a large portion of the NATO nations of Europe, which are also contributing, less than we are, of course, but are also contributing to this war defending Ukraine. And because of this, Russia is completely exposing the shortcomings and weaknesses and inadequacies of their military. Mm. And well, they do. They're losing badly to a country that is a fraction of their size that they expected to roll into and be done with in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're exposing is Russia's inability to launch a major military operation.
So
for $75 billion, we're bankrupting the Russian military.
Okay, but we aren't, right? This is a proxy war, right? This is gross, military-industrial complex nonsense where Americans foot the bill to engage in proxy war with geopolitical enemies. And so when you say, well, we're bankrupting Russia or whatever, that's not true because they're still selling oil and gas to India and China, right? I mean,
they're burning through their military assets. Right. They have a conscripture. I mean, anybody who can walk and chew gum is now a soldier fighting for Russia. Their Wehrmacht division, which is their elite division, just got decimated.
But your claim was that we're bankrupting the Russian,
military. I said Russia's military.
But what difference does it make if they're making tons of money from the Chinese and from the Indian government selling their oil at cost to them, right? It doesn't make any difference whatsoever. This is the thing, Spike, is that this entire conflict is basically to level out the petrodollar on the national stage. It's not about
Russian independence?
This is all about money. This is all about oil. And if you could think about it in this way, Spike, in a lot of ways, what we've basically done is you can either buy oil and gas from the United States and companies that do business with the United States, or you can buy oil and gas from Russia. It's basically what you've done. And so if you want to spend $75 billion so that corporate billionaires can line their pockets even further, being that the petrodollar has increased since the conflict, fine, that's great. But what you're basically doing is you're basically saying, let's take American taxpayer dollars to influence the global price of oil to such a degree where six people get more money.
Well, I also think I'm defending Ukrainian sovereignty. I think I'm helping Ukrainians defend innocent civilians who have been targeted.
I mean, you're not. I mean,
well, it's my dollars. It's my. I paid for the rocket. I can say sovereign. Right? I think I got to sign one of those rockets they sent. Sign that.
The sad part about all this, Spike, is it's not even really. I mean, have you seen the images of people in Ukraine? They're going to McDonald's. They're going to nightclubs. They're having a grand old time. It doesn't really seem like a country at war.
The fact they're not eating borscht, that's our crime, right?
You've got, what is it, like a seventh of the country that's currently in conflict, and the rest of the country's got iPhones and McDonald's, and they're living the high life. They're going to nightclubs. They're having a grand old time. And so I just don't – forgive me for being cynical on this issue.
You're good at it. Come on.
Thank you so much.
I wish I was that good at it.
Hey, speaking of being cynical, by the way, there's a lot of talk about how Pride Month is going to be starting tomorrow at Rainbow Capitalism. And everybody says, why we got to do this every year? We shall discuss when we get back right after this.